just gave away my sermon, Steve. He's right in the middle of it. He's going backwards here. Are you an engineer? Is that what you do for a living? Double checking. I'm just making sure. It's so good to see you. This is a difficult night in some ways because it's the night that I try to somehow express to all of you how much I appreciate all you've done for me and Beth. And that's just always a hard thing to do because words really are inadequate for us to express how much all of you mean to us. You have been so kind. You have done so much for us, and you have taken us in as if we were part of this group, and we so much appreciate that. One of the great blessings, I think, of being able to preach is that you do get to see and meet so many wonderful people, most of whom are Christians. They are believers. They are disciples, and such is the case with you, and it has been a thrill for me and for Beth to do that with you. We have gotten to renew acquaintances and kind of reconnect with some folks that have been so dear to us through the years. And you know who you are, and we are grateful for that. And we've gotten to meet some new people, and that's been a real pleasure for us as well. And it's hard for me to adequately express, or you're just going to have to accept the fact that I say thank you for Beth and me and tell you how much we really do appreciate all you have done for us. It has been a thrill. And one thing that I have learned is I will be very careful when I use illustrations to not say important things to make cause people to do things for me. That's been very nice, I will tell you. I kind of appreciate that. So the meeting's going to actually continue through October. So just so y'all know, you don't have to come, but I'm going to be here every night, just so you know. But it has been a privilege for us to do. And I want to just invite you to come to Florence and see us. You know, a lot of times I get away with that, saying you can come see us because people live too far away. I don't know if I run a risk. You might actually take me up on that. We'd love to have you come, just not all at one time. So if you can, just kind of spread it out. But we would love to have you come. I will say this. Beginning on the 27th, that's a week from Sunday, we begin our series of meetings that last through Wednesday night with Phil Robertson. Phil preaches with the church in Gainesville, Florida. Phil's going to be holding our meeting from the 27th through the 30th of the month. I know you can't come on Sunday, you'll be here. I know you can't come on Wednesday, you'll be here. But Monday or Tuesday night, feel free to show up in Florence. Listen, if you don't know how to get there, tell me. I know exactly how to get back to Florence. So I'll be glad to help you, Beth. But we'd love to have you. And anytime that you can come and be with us. But thank you all. You have touched our heart in a way that it's indescribable. And we want all of you to know that. So thank you so much. I want to read these words, and I'd like for you to follow along with me, if you would, from Luke 14. These are words that are familiar to us. Now great multitudes went with him. And he turned and said to them, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." There are several instances in Scripture where these same words are recorded, even on different occasions. But this is a strong, not to be understood statement, it seems to me, about commitment. Verse 27, Jesus said, "And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." That's a very clear statement about what it takes. And Jesus says, if you're unwilling to bear your cross, there's absolutely no way that you can be my disciple. The passage that states a similar language in Luke 9 says, "Then he said to them all, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me." That word is used in that particular sense in Luke 9. It's not in all of the original transcripts or texts, but I think Jesus would certainly help us understand that taking up one's cross is something that the Christian does on a daily basis. And then in Matthew 10, in verse 38, he says, "And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it. And he who loses his life for my sake will find it." I think there are several statements that help us begin to understand what Jesus means, but it may be that this statement recorded in Matthew's Gospel, at least in my mind, gets to the very heart of what it means to take up one's cross daily. And I think verse 39 particularly, when he says, "He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it." Well, here's my question, at least initially tonight. What does it mean to take up your cross? If I just ask you, what does that mean? Well, the most frequent answer that I think we not only hear, but the most frequent answer that many times I think is even preached, and I've done it for years, is that what we need to do is sacrifice. We need to make sure that we're willing to offer the sacrifices and make the sacrifices which Jesus expects of us if we're going to take up our cross. And I think that's very much true. I'm not suggesting that that's wrong, but I am suggesting that that may not be exactly what Jesus had in mind here. And in these other passages we've looked at initially, when he said that you need to be willing to take up your cross daily and follow me. Is that what Jesus wanted them to understand? Was he saying, what you need to do is be willing to sacrifice? Is that what Jesus meant by making the statements he made? Well, what did these words, take up your cross, mean to these who were first century Christians? Well, think about what it meant in the first century to those particularly. You know, the Romans had not invented crucifixion. But they had certainly honed it, if the term honed is the right way to describe what they had done. They had done that. It was their number one form of capital punishment. Crosses were common sights. People could roam the streets and roam the streets in Rome and around Rome, and they could see this very kind of thing that I have pictured here. They saw that was a regular sight which they saw. They were common sights. And the roads were lined with bodies on crosses. And I want to suggest to us tonight that what they thought when Jesus said that you need to take up your cross is not what we think when we read Jesus has said, take up your cross. I'm going to suggest to us that what they thought and what we thought very probably are two different things. These were people, I believe, who were ready to die. When they saw a cross and when they had seen what would happen to those people who were hung on crosses, it didn't, I don't think, enter their mind. What Jesus means is you may need to sacrifice some of your possessions. You may need to not participate in a certain event. I'm not sure that's what they thought. They saw what it meant to take up one's cross. And I'm suggesting to us tonight that ready to die, and the idea of being ready to die, took a while for them to grasp. They saw it, and I think it would take a while for us to grasp as well. Well, I want to show you why I think it might have taken them a while. But once they got it, I think it made a big difference in their lives. And I want to look particularly at what happened to the apostles. This passage in Matthew 26 is a statement. It gives insight into Peter's view about Zechariah's prophecy. And I just want to read this and then go back and look at this for just a minute. Then Jesus said to them, "All of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written," now this is Zechariah's prophecy, "I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee." Peter answered and said to him, "Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble." Jesus said to him, "Assuredly I say to you that this night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." And Peter said to him, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And so said all the disciples. Peter is headstrong. He's very confident to a fault that he's not going to do what Zechariah said, yes, they would do. And so Jesus responds in verse 34, and Peter responds to Jesus' response in verse 35 by saying, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." He was beginning to get the point. But I want you to look at the last statement that's made. "So said all the disciples." When we think about the denial And the statements that Peter made to the Lord here and even in other places, and we think, all right, Peter was the one that had the problem. This tells us that all the disciples were saying the same thing. And if you go down a little later in this same chapter, Peter, you remember, denies the Lord. And then you remember that great phrase that says, and then he went out and wept bitterly. I want to suggest that Peter is somewhat of the poster child for denying who Christ was. We have it recorded because he said, I'll not do it, Lord. Far be it from me, if you will, to think that I'm going to, I'll die for you if I have to. And yet, when it was such that he could have done that, when he could not have denied him, he did deny him. And so did the rest of the disciples. Now, can you imagine just for a moment the reaction of Christ? We know the reaction of Christ to Peter. But can you imagine what Christ is thinking as he's dealing with what he's about to deal with at the end of his life? And yet, all of these who have heard him say, you need to be willing to take up your cross. At the time when they could have been willing to do that, they all leave him. And while they may have heard the words, they didn't understand. Not completely what Jesus said. Because their reaction is different than what even Jesus had hoped. But I want to show you a post-resurrection contrast. I want to show you a contrast that's found in Acts, the 5th chapter. After the apostles had been arrested, and as they are in front of the Sanhedrin, and the council is reacting to what they have done, and they're trying to decide what it is that they must do. You remember Gamaliel? It says, commanded them to put the apostles out for a while. I think it shows Gamaliel's influence over the council. And after these apostles have been arrested, Gamaliel says, let's set them outside, let's put them out for a minute, and let's discuss this. And Gamaliel's advice to the council is, what we need to do, fellas, is back off. We've got a real issue here, and what we need to do is back off, and we really need to keep away from these men. Because he's going to say, if what they're doing is from God, we can't stop it. Now, if what they're doing is not from God, it's not going to matter. It's going to fail. It's going to just go the way of everything else that's not from God. It's not going to last. And when you get to Acts, the 5th chapter, in verse 40, this is how they reacted to that. The Sanhedrin, verse 40 says, and they, referring to the men of the council, they agreed with him. And when they had called for the apostles and beaten them, they commanded that they should not speak in the name of Jesus, and they let them go. So they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. I want you to look at the change. Verse 40 describes the council's response and their decision. They call for the apostles, bring them back in, and they beat them, and they said to them, we're telling you, do not preach in the name of Jesus. And once they'd stated that, they let them go. And so now you have a reaction. What happened in verse 41? This is how the apostles felt. So they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. Now, does that sound like to you? Does that sound like what happened prior to that? Does that sound like what happened to Peter when he denied the Lord 3 times? And the Lord told him, you're going to do this. And all the disciples, they said the same thing. Does this sound like what happened prior to the crucifixion? I'll tell you what, folks, these people are changed people. And I want you to think about verse 42. Think about it. Now, I know you can see it. And we're going to read it. We're going to look at it again in a minute. But I want you to think about what had just happened. Why they had been put into prison. And here's what they did when they got out. And daily in the temple. Now, can I make a observation? If I'm going to be beaten for preaching Jesus as the Christ, and if I am going to have been commanded, I'm going to beat you, but I'm telling you, when you leave here, I'm going to let you go. But when I let you go, I don't want you doing it again. A little advice, apostles. The first place you probably ought not go is to the temple. You know, let's start out kind of small here, and let's work our way toward the temple. Maybe let's start out, I don't know, maybe in the Galilee somewhere, and kind of work our way down. But let's don't go to the temple. No, this passage says, and they went to the temple how often? Every day. Last time I checked, that's what daily means. Every day. Daily they went to the temple. And notice what else they did. And in every house. Now, let me make another observation. If I'm going to be beaten for having preached the name of Christ, if I'm going to be beaten for that, I'll tell you what I'd do. I might go from house to house, but I don't know that I'd go to every house. I'd scan a little bit. I'd walk the neighborhood and I'd say, you know, that's where the high priest is. I think, well, just let's bypass that house. I don't think we'd go there, at least not for the first, 4 or 5 years. Let's bypass that. No, that's not what they did. They went preaching from house to house. And before that, they went to the temple and they were preaching that. And they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. The very thing that they told them not to do, they did at the very worst places they could possibly go in reference to what might happen to them. The apostles got it. They're changed people. Now prior to that, I know they were concerned. Yes, we've been following the Lord, but now He's going to be crucified and things aren't looking too good. And yes, I have denied Him, not once, not twice, but 3 times. And the other fellows that are with me, they've done it too. But now they get it, folks. Nothing could stop them now. If this passage doesn't tell us that these are changed men, I don't know what does. Here's my question to us. Do we get this? Do we recognize the fact that we may be asked to die for Jesus Christ? When I was a teenager, I hear preachers get up and talk about, you know, would you be able to die for Christ? And I'm thinking, I ain't going to have to die for Christ. I live in the United States of America. We got a great army, you know, everybody's good in my neighborhood and in my state and my country. Everything's going pretty well. Everybody seems to be pretty much, they're falling in line. I'll tell you what. We don't live in my neighborhood anymore. We don't live in your neighborhood anymore. Not the way it was. Not the way it was. And my question is do we recognize the fact that we may be asked to die for Jesus? Does that threat seem real to you? When I say that to you, does that just kind of, you say, well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good preacher talk, Kenny. Are you sitting there like I'm standing here thinking, no, this is very real. Unless you've had your head in the sand, you are aware that this kind of thing is very real. It was real to first century Christians. I'll guarantee you, it was real. That idea of having to die for Jesus, it was very real to them. And my question is when you see the change that takes place in the lives of these men, how does that mindset affect you now? Well, consider something else. This is from Hebrews 12. Listen to this. You're familiar with this text. Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. A lot of things have to do with the cross, you see. You're aware of that. This passage tells us that Jesus endured the cross. He despised the shame. Basically, He endured the shame that was associated with not only the cross, but what happened prior to that. Well, what did happen prior to that? Well, Matthew 27 says this, then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium, gathered the whole garrison around Him, and they stripped Him. And they put a scarlet robe on Him, and when they had twisted a crown of thorns, they put it on His head and a reed in His right hand. And they bowed the knee before Him and mocked Him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews. Then they spat on Him and took the reed and struck Him on the head. And when they had mocked him, they took the robe off him, put his own clothes on him, and led him away to be crucified. Now we're talking before the crucifixion. We've read these verses 100 times, 1,000 times. We've heard these verses read before we take of the Lord's Supper on the first of the week. I think it's a perfect reading. It does get into our minds. It helps us evaluate and appreciate the very fact of here's what Christ has done for us. But look what happened to him. The Hebrew writer says he endured the shame and endured the cross and despised shame. Here's what happened to him. Well, they stripped him. They mocked him. They struck him. They put a twisted crown of thorns on his head. They spat on him. And they took off the scarlet robe of mockery and they put on his own clothes. Now, I don't know everything that took place, but just these few verses tell us this was a public humiliation. Everything about it was humiliating. And then it says they led him away to be crucified. There is something else about being led away to be crucified and about crucifixion itself that I want you to think about. Roman crucifixion was horrible. The victim would be nailed to the cross, and it was not conducted with a small cloth or a garment to put around a person's midsection. The victim of a Roman crucifixion was hung naked. Very probably Jesus was hung on the cross naked. The public humiliation that was affected by that was tremendous. And what Jesus went through is documented, obviously, by inspiration. And may I suggest to us, and this is really what I want you to get out of this lesson. What he demanded of himself is what I believe he asked of us. And I believe what he said, the way he wanted them to understand it, is what you must do is you must take up your cross daily. I don't think he was thinking, what you need to do is be willing to sacrifice for me. I'm not suggesting that it's not there. But I don't think that's initially what Jesus had in mind. I think Jesus was saying, are you willing to lose your life? Are you willing to take up your cross daily? Now, let me make an observation about these sacrifices that we have to make. I think it's very important that we make sacrifices for the Lord. I think that's clear. And that may very well be what he's trying to get across here. And I'm not suggesting at all that there's not some of that in there. But I'm saying that the primary thought is, are you willing to do what I am going to show you I am willing to do? And I would suggest to all of us that it is a very real question that we need to ask ourselves. But the observation that I want to make is this. When a person says to his Lord, I'm willing to die for you, those other sacrifices come easy. If you're willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for the Lord, you're going to be willing to make those other sacrifices that we talk about. You're going to be willing to say, Lord, if that's not a place that a Christian ought to go, that's an easy call for me. And the reason that's an easy call is because I'm willing to die for you. You know, Lord, if this is not what a Christian ought to be wearing, then I'll not wear it. That's an easy call for me. And the reason it's an easy call is because I'm willing to die for it. You know, if that's not the kind of language, Lord, that a Christian ought to be using, I'm good with that. That's not the kind of language that I need to be using, because that's easy, because I'm willing to die for it. You see the difference? What Jesus wants is this commitment that says, I'm willing and you're willing to make the ultimate sacrifice. And when we're willing to do that, folks, then the rest is easy. Now comes the hard question. I have preached this text a lot of places. I preached this particular lesson with a few adjustments. I preached it for a young people's weekend in Irving, Texas. And my assigned topic was take up your cross daily. It was all the lessons had to do with the cross, and my particular lesson had to do with this idea of taking up your cross daily. And I did in that sermon pretty much what I've done here. There were about 800 people in the audience, most of whom were young people. I would say high school, college age primarily. And when the lesson was over, I saw a young man come toward me, probably about 16 years old. And I'd never met him, but I could tell he really had an important question he wanted to ask me. You know, you know when you preach and the sermon's over, you kind of tell them someone wants to talk to you. You get a little nervous. If you think you're not sure, you know, you kind of walk away from them. But I was kind of stuck. So here this young man came toward me, and I said, "Yes, sir." And I met him, and he said, "I have a question." And I thought, oh boy, you know, he's 16. I better be able to answer this question. If I don't, I'm going to feel bad. He said, "I have a question that you didn't answer." I said, "Well, you just go right ahead and ask." He said, "Would you be willing to die for Jesus?" And I just kind of froze. I thought, how am I going to answer that? And here's what I said to him. I said, "I hope so. I hope so. I don't know so." After that lesson, an older man was talking to him, and he said, "I have another question I want you to add to that sermon." I said, "Good." His question was, "Are you willing to live for Jesus, not die for Jesus?" I thought, I'm getting a whole series out of being here with these people. But have I thought about that? Those are really the two questions. Would I be willing to live for Jesus? And would I be willing to die for Jesus? So I ask you that question tonight. You listen to me all week. I'm going to stop early. You'll be okay with that, won't you? But I want you to think about this very important question. We need to understand that it's not just about dying for Him. It is about living for Him. And He asked of us to do both. And we have to do like we talked about last night. I think it's best for us if we do, as best we can, we do what Daniel did. I mentioned Daniel 1 and verse 8 last night when I was talking about those 10 commandments for young people that Daniel made up his mind or he purposed in his heart. That's what we have to do. When I hear about these people, and you are familiar with this, and I don't want to talk about this too much, but you are familiar with these people that on occasion have to confess to people or say to people, "Yes, I do believe," at the risk of losing their life. You are aware of those kind of situations. And I just tell you tonight that I hope and pray that when the time comes, if the time comes for me to have to make that decision, I hope I can do that. So I want you to think about that. And when you read this passage, I want you to think about the decision that you'd make. Thank you so much for listening. You have given me your undivided attention all week. And for that, I am truly grateful. But I am most appreciative of the fact that you've been willing to listen to the message of God. If I have not shared with you what God wanted me to share, may God help me. May He forgive me. But I have tried to the whatever ability I have to try to do that. And I pray that it will have landed on a good and an honest heart. If you have a spiritual need tonight, would you respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ and then commit yourself to living for Him? And if need be, commit yourself to dying for Him. If I am ever faced with having to say, "Yes, I do believe in Jesus," at the cost of losing my life, I pray to God that I'm willing to do that. May God help us all. If you have a need, come forward as we stand and as we sing.